Good evening, everyone. I'm Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your radio of reason and independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday, November 4th, 2007. It is now about 8:03 Central Standard Time in the good old USA. Liberty Talk Radio is your antidote to popular talk radio. Here you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, or Stalingrad. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. And now on to our program. Good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620, and we'll take your comments while on the air. Although at other times, you may call 903-551-2186 to leave a voice message. And of course, you can send us email at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. And we'll try to respond to your questions during our next live broadcast. In addition to accessing Liberty Talk Radio from our website, you may now access our broadcast from blogtalkradio.com/Liberty Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone. And I'm sorry for the little couple-minute late start. We had a little bit of technical difficulty on my end. I have an instant message here. And just let me answer this instant message first. Because we have instant messages, we have email coming in, and then we also have phone calls coming in. Right now, you know, we've been hearing a lot during the presidential debates about the definition of torture. And I know this has nothing to do with the healthcare issue, which we're going to get to just in a minute. But what's, I think, particularly disconcerting is the fact that we should be even speaking about torture. You know, here we are trying to define torture, gagging people, flooding their mouths with water, giving the impression that they're going to drown to death, and almost at the point of drowning to death, do they take the water out, and, you know, obviously, and they don't kill the person, but the person actually believes that they're going to die doing this. And then they want to define whether or not, well, is this torture, this not torture? This is supposed to be the United States. We are supposed to be a country of free people, all people who are free. Anyone who wants to be free, who wants to be their own person, who wants to strive to do better, who wants to do better for themselves, they come to the United States. But we've evolved from that to something which we now are an empire, and we are telling everybody else how to run their lives, and we are doing things that, quite frankly, all the other empires around the world have done through the millennium. We should not even have this conversation. This is what these bastards should be saying. You know, why are we even having a conversation about torture? All torture is wrong. We shouldn't have enemies. We should not have enemy combatants. We should not be in other countries telling them what to do. There is no reason to have any. We should have no. Ron Paul said this. He says, we don't have enemies. We make enemies. And he's absolutely correct. And every time I hear things about the definition of torture, I just go nuts. We should not be torturing anyone in any way. We should not be harming anyone in any way. We should not be imprisoning anyone unless they actually broke the law and they need to be taken off the streets because they are, in fact, a menace to society. I was listening to a on Book TV on C-SPAN. There was a Reese Ehrlich, and he wrote a book, The Iranian Agenda. And one thing he said, it was a fascinating review of his book. And I wish everyone would have heard it because they would have understood the Iranian situation a lot better. Iran is no threat to the United States. If it was a threat to the United States, they would have already been a threat. If they were a threat to Israel, they would have invaded Israel a long time ago. They have the troops, they have the missiles, they have the guns, the tanks, and all this other place. Well, why don't they do it now? Are they just waiting to have an atomic make an atomic bomb? No. Well, Iran knows that if in fact it invaded Israel, that there would be international repercussions, and there would be more than just the United States and Israel going after them. There'll be the European Community and many other countries that would be on their neck. So all of this, this fear mongering on our part of Iran, Iran is the new Nazi Germany, you know, of the Middle East, is just enough to inflame the emotions of very, very ignorant Americans. Americans who are ignorant of foreign policy. Americans are ignorant of history. And unfortunately, we are. We are generally an ignorant nation. And that's I hate saying that, but that's in fact the case. Pick up an American history book from our schools, and you'll see the garbage that they're feeding these kids. Right. Now, what he said was of particular interest to me was the fact, and this is something that, by the way, that Buchanan, remember Buchanan from, Pat Buchanan from Crossfire on TV, and he ran for president once, he mentioned a couple of years ago that the country that was most favorable to the United States of the people, not the government, but peoples that are most favorable to the United States were the Iranians because we have basically left them alone for 20 years. Excuse me. Had a tickle in my throat. Excuse me. And he said, provided we leave them alone, he says, the people will take care of things in their own country. So what he said, Ehrlich said, in his presentation, was that the Iranian people were actually angry with the United States because when they protest against the government, and they don't like their government, they're protesting against them. When they protest against their government, the government, since the United States is doing all of this warmongering against them, you know, they are being classified as U.S. agents, you know, and they're basically enemy combatants in their own backyard. Well, no, they're just people. They don't like their government any more than we do. They want the government out. And we are inhibiting that process. Isn't that fascinating? So why don't we just leave them alone? All right, let's talk a little bit about healthcare. I'm going to get very basic. I've done some research on mass health, and it's a big boondoggle. This thing is such a massive, massive bureaucratic boondoggle. It is absolutely unbelievable, but I want to get very basic just for a moment. Of course, as you know, I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Oklahoma right now, well, did it one time, and I'm not certain if it still has this distinction, of having the heaviest people in the United States. Now, I'm not making fun of heavy people. Oh, I got we have a caller coming in. Yes, caller, you're on the air. This is Liberty Talk Radio.
Joe, how you doing?
Fine. Who's this?
This is Andy.
Andy, how are you? I haven't heard from you in a long time. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Great. I'm doing fine. Thank you. What could we do you out of today?
What's that?
What could we do you out of today?
I was just listening to your bit on healthcare, and I couldn't agree with you more. we've got a lot of knee-jerk reactions going on, and we have a lot of politicians that are promising a lot of things that they have no idea how they're going to pay for.
All right, now, Andy, are you somewhat familiar with Mass Health, with that program?
Not really. I to be honest with you, I haven't really followed too many of these healthcare initiatives, other than on a basic level, just because they always seem to run into the same problem, and it's going to be a money issue. They always end up costing, you know, a factor of 10 more than they're supposed to.
Right.
And, you know, it's just one of those things. It's all kind of the same book, different cover. You know, with these ideas, we're going to do all these things. We're going to give everybody freebies and handouts, and we're not going to pay for it. We're going to either borrow the money, we're going to print the money, or, you know, whatever. But in my opinion, they're all the same.
Oh, yes, you're absolutely correct. In fact, MassHealth now and it's new, and it's already, their experience has been that it's been a lot more expensive than they had ever projected or had anticipated, even on the wild side. And it's now partially federally subsidized, and now they have to go back for more subsidies because they cannot afford it. And this was all done for the benefit of only 6% of the population, because when MassHealth went into effect, 94% of the population was already insured. Now, of the 6% that were not insured, one quarter of that 6% were on Medicaid. A good portion of them were young men who did not want health care, and the other portion were people who actually could afford health care but elected voluntarily not to participate in any plan. So what did MassHealth wind up doing? Benefiting whom? Absolutely no one but the politicians.
That's pretty much what you've got with the situation with this Medicare prescription drug benefit, too. That was supposed to cost, what was it, $300 billion, something like that, over 10 years, and it's going to end up costing, you know, 3-4 times that.
Yeah. Well,
and the thing is, you know, I have parents that are elderly, and, you know, they've got, you know, they're in relatively good health, and they have, you know, four or five prescriptions each, you know how it goes, and they're not, you know, they've been told, well, you make too much money for this, but, you know, it's a mess. It doesn't really, I don't know who it benefits.
Right, and unfortunately, it's turned out that we have the most expensive healthcare system in the world right now, and it's all because it's a government mess. It's not because our healthcare is inefficient. It's because the government has made it inefficient. And every time the government gets involved, the cost of our healthcare goes up for everyone.
Well, exactly. And what you have here is, you know, right now we have, like you said, the most expensive healthcare system. For now, at least, it's still the best. As soon as the government goes to this socialized model, that's going to stop.
Right.
It's going to be the most expensive, and it's not even going to be the best anymore. You're not going to have the innovation anymore because there's not going to be any incentive.
There's no incentive to improve. In fact, there's only an incentive to ration.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you something, Andy. Since you're the resident expert on the economy and what's going on, can you give us a little break from healthcare? Since you're on the line, we have you on the line. We're going to pick your brains. What's going on in the economic front?
Well, right now we've seen over the past week we've seen a lot of turbulence in the stock markets. We've had some pretty big up days. We've had some pretty big down days. We've had the Fed, since the last time you and I talked, they've cut the federal funds rate twice. The first time was 50 basis points. This last time, back on October 31st, they cut it another 25 points. But the ironic thing is they cut the interest rate, you know, the same week that this GDP number comes out, and they says, oh, you know, the economy's fine, it's growing at a great rate, and, you know, everything's fine and dandy. Then why the rate cut? You know, and it just, the two things just totally did not mesh together at all, the two news pieces. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to counteract a serious problem that's going on right under the surface, and that's in the credit markets.
Right.
If you take a look at what they're doing there is they're working with what's called a target rate. That federal funds rate is
right,
a target.
Yeah, that, right.
What they try to maintain.
Right.
And if you look at, I believe it was back on October 25th, somebody else brought this to my attention. They had it was about $75 million in interbank loans that actually went for 15% instead of 4.75%. All right. It's like, why would a bank borrow money from another bank at 15% when they could go to the discount window and get it for a 50 basis point penalty? There's something going on underneath the surface.
Yeah.
And it's being ignored.
Right. Well,
and it's being ignored, and you see it come out in the stock market. You see it come out, you know, in the bond market here and there occasionally. There's a little bit of a ripple, and it's really being at this point concealed from the public. The public really has no idea what's going on. But there's a lot of problems with credit. This mortgage mess is only getting started.
Well, you know, I asked a friend of mine what he thought of this. Credit crunch and debacle and whatever, and he says, "Oh, it doesn't affect me. I paid off my mortgage." And I guess you're right. He has no concept of what is going on, and we're not going to feel the effects of this for another six months to a year when all this thing comes to roost. And the talking heads on CNBC and saying, "Well, geez, the worst is over now. You know, the banks are sort of cleaning their act up, and you know that's over. The worst is over. The worst hasn't arrived yet. Am I correct?"
I agree with you. If you look at just over the past couple of weeks, we had Merrill Lynch. They took an $8 billion write-down in the third quarter because of bad debts, mostly for mortgages and other related types of instruments. They unloaded their CEO. They gave him $150 million in change, severance package. You know, they unloaded him. You've got Citibank got creamed the other day. The financial sector has been down in a big way. The resets are continuing, and the resets are going to continue and continue and continue in the next year.
Right.
And you take a look at you've got that going on. All right. You've got the price of oil. You've got close to $96 a barrel. All right, for oil. That's phenomenal.
We're going to see $100 a barrel oil, I'll bet you, next week. It wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if we didn't see it tomorrow.
Yeah.
this week, you know, who knows? I mean, Goldman Sachs came out the other day, and, you know, they started using their mouthpiece, and they said, well, you know, this is a great time to sell oil. We think this is a great time to take profits, and it went down $3 in a day, and the next day it was right back up again.
That's right, yeah.
So people came in and they bought that. You've got gold over $800 an ounce. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Right. It closed at 806, right.
800.
Yeah.
The 27-year, 28-year high.
Right.
27, I believe. 1980, yeah, 27-year high. You know, so you've got that going on. You've got the dollar breaking down well below the long-term support levels. And that dollar chart, I don't know if you've taken a look at it recently. I'll send you a chart. It looks awful.
Yeah, one of your last newsletters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm actually, what I'm going to do for anybody who wants to check out my website, mytwocentsonline.com, I'll put that chart right on the front page.
Yeah, I didn't mention your website in my introduction this time because I wasn't sure if you were keeping that up from the email that you had sent me. I wasn't sure if you were still maintaining that, and I forgot to...
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I will mention it. Folks, please go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two, okay? Okay, I did my duty to God and country.
I appreciate that. I mean, I get a fair amount of referrals from your site. And
great.
Hopefully,
I'm glad you do.
Hopefully, you know, that's working both ways.
Yeah.
You're getting some from us as well.
Yeah, I sure am. Yeah, and people do mention you, so it's working very well, Andy. I really appreciate that very much. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. You're down in Tulsa.
Yes.
What are you seeing down there? You know, I worry more about Main Street. You know, Wall Street, you know, yes, it's interesting to pay attention to and things like that. My concern and my focus is really on all right, how does all of this affect the average person, you know, the person on Main Street, you know, that's paying for health care, that's paying for gas, that's paying for food? What are you seeing down in your neck of the woods right now?
Not much of an effect here in Tulsa yet. Our housing market has been very steady. We've had no housing bubble here at all. I can tell you industry is humming along like crazy. Now, I have an industrial health testing business, so we're in factories all the time, although I'm sort of retired from my own business. You know, I poked my head in there once in a while. And business is growing, and I'm absolutely convinced the reason why our business is so good is that most of the factories that go to are big fabrication shops that make big stuff, you know. And a lot of this stuff is going for the Army, or the military, rather, is taking the resources away from so many major manufacturers that people cannot get steel, they cannot get parts fabricated, so it trickles down, so all of the smaller fabricators all over the country are busy as all hell. Because because we're in a wartime economy. I suspect that if we pulled out of Iraq on Monday, my business would suffer tremendously. And so be it. I mean, I'm not complaining at all. I mean, that's the way it is. That's the way it is. But back in 2001, 2002, before we went to Iraq, we went to factories and they'd have, you know, 40 people working there. Now they have 120 at the same company. They're all looking for employees to work, and there are places that hire primarily illegal aliens. I know, because when you go there, no one speaks English, no one has a social security card, but there's no one to work, you know. And some of these jobs are pretty tough, you know. They're foundries and stuff like that. Very, very busy. So we are doing really okay. We will probably get the very tail end of it here in Tulsa. That's my opinion.
Yeah, that kind of jives with what we're seeing up here in the Northeast, too. I mean, if you look at, like, the Philly Fed survey, I mean, yeah, that really has been kind of stagnant. But we don't have an awful lot of fabricators and heavy manufacturing, not, at least not like we used to. Now, we did have something of a housing bubble in this area. And I can tell you, just driving around the area, it's not as bad as what you see on the internet. You know, pictures of California neighborhoods,
yeah,
with, you know, 3, 4, 5 for sale signs per block. But I'll tell you what, in some places, it's pretty darn close to that.
I see.
We've got a huge number of houses on the market right now. Yeah. What we're noticing is gas prices, obviously, you know, have been going up over the past couple of months. And it's getting very expensive at the grocery store.
Right. I know, because my wife, I usually go shopping with my wife, and, you know, it's just her and I, and we just go there. And I like to buy a lot of fruits and vegetables, and boy, is that getting expensive. I recall a time when I could buy just about any fruit or any vegetable for, you know, a batch for under a dollar, you know, 69 cents, 49 cents. Now those days are far gone. I mean, by two and threefold.
It's ironic, you know. You talk about healthcare, and we need to have healthcare, and we need to have socialized healthcare. If you listen to, you know, most of the, you know, except for Ron Paul, if you listen to the, you know, the mainstream presidential candidates, this is a little ironic. At least I find it to be ironic. You know, the government, and through the Federal Reserve and through the banking system, has made it impossible for the average family to eat healthy. Yet they want to figure out a way to rip you off more and tax you more so that they can give you health care when you can't eat healthy.
You know, it's all an illusion. I mean, what the government does is always an illusion. It just, and we don't see that. When I ask people questions, and I do it all the time just to get a feel for how people are thinking, they answer just in step with what you hear on TV or the government version of it. They say, well, we have to do that because of blah, blah. And they go and they repeat exactly what they heard on TV. They repeat back, and they never give it any more thought.
Oh, absolutely. I tell you what, though, I think that's starting to, you know, that bit of blind faith is starting to come to an end, though, a little bit, especially, you know, with the inflation numbers that have come out recently.
Yeah.
From Bureau of Labor Statistics, and particularly this GDP. Because if you look at how they adjust the GDP, they're assuming that inflation is actually going down. and that's why they can report a higher GDP.
Yeah,
because they're adjusting it with a very, very low inflation number, and it's like, how many people could you find that are gonna agree with the idea that, oh yeah, inflation has gone down considerably in the past year? No, I don't think too many people.
Right, I don't think anyone would buy that.
You know, exactly, and a lot of the people that I get emails from are just like, how can anybody even say that? You know, don't they shop? Well, apparently not. You know, don't these people have expenses? You know, don't they have, you know, healthcare bills and food bills and, you know, and so forth? You know, so there's a lot of skepticism amongst the, you know, at least some of the people that I communicate with, which is good. I mean, there should be skepticism.
Right.
You know, this thing is a giant Ponzi scheme, and you know, once people start to become aware of it and start to plan and react to it as they should, instead of in this false fashion because of this bad data. Once that happens, then the Ponzi scheme ends.
You know, I mentioned something, I think it was last week, and please correct me if I spoke out of turn. When the announcement came out that the interest rate, the federal funds rate, was going to be reduced by 25 basis points, that in fact made the dollar less attractive, which increased, which forced the exporting nations, the OPEC, for example, to increase the price of oil because the dollar was less attractive. So now we are paying more for oil, which increases our balance of trade deficit, which then debases the dollar further, which forces them to increase the price of oil. I mean, based on the U.S. dollar. Am I right? Is that a vicious cycle that we're going to go through? Just we're going to see this thing turn over and over again? One thing chasing the other?
The oil price, like when you look at that $96 a barrel price, that's actually determined the New York Mercantile Exchange.
Yeah.
So that's on a market, but you're essentially correct.
Okay.
You know, when they cut the interest rate, you know, that makes the dollar a little, you know, less attractive. The Asians, as far, you know, the big, you know, how they were recycling their dollars in the U.S. Treasuries for a long time, that slowed down to the point where it's almost been flat, except for Japan.
I see.
Now, you know, the Chinese, in net, have pretty much stopped buying U.S. Treasuries. The OPEC nations are starting to give away a lot of signs, and Kuwait already did this. You know, they're starting to cut loose with their dollar pegs. They're starting to give up their dollar pegs. Saudi Arabia has not been lowering interest rates in their country in lockstep with our Fed, which means they're not defending the dollar peg.
Okay.
Because if they want to keep their currency at a fixed rate with ours, they have to grow their money supply at the same rate ours grows.
Yes.
And they also have to keep their interest rates at the same rate as ours.
Okay, I didn't know that. Know that.
Peg.
Yeah, I understand.
There's a lot of the OPEC countries are not happy because they can't turn these dollars around and buy what they used to be able to buy because the dollar's fallen so much.
Right.
So
I heard
there's
someone
be a lot of pressure on the dollar.
I heard someone make the comment in that tongue in cheek, but I think it was a valid comment. They said Saudi Arabia needs our toilet paper more than we need their oil. I thought it was a cute comment, but I think it's a valid one. I mean, it makes the point. I mean, we always look at it as a one-way street, but they have to buy from us all of these manufactured goods that, you know, that we make relatively inexpensively because of our productivity enhancements in factories and whatever. And yet, if they buy them, they have to buy them with inflated dollars, and they don't want to do that. If they're going to buy it with inflated dollars, they're going to increase the price of oil. So we have this vicious cycle running around. It's like a gerbil running in a cage.
Well, yeah, you know, and the myth, you know, and I wrote about this a few weeks ago, the myth about the falling dollar is that it's such a huge benefit to our exporting businesses. And while that's true in the short run,
yes,
you know, because it makes the falling dollar makes our exports more competitive overseas.
Yes.
You know, against some of these other currencies, against some of these local products. But the problem is, you know, we are not a manufacturing-based economy. We're an import-based economy. We import you know, a good portion, especially consumer goods. You know, just walk into a Walmart or a Kmart.
Right.
Try and find something that's not made somewhere else. Try and find things that are made here. It's hard. You know, so we're importing all those things. The cost of those things is going up.
Right.
So the consumer is getting creamed, you know, because import prices are rising, and they have been. So we're, you know, the consumer is seeing that. Yeah, the companies get, you know, a temporary boom because of the, you know, their products become more competitive. But one of the problems is they have to pay more for raw materials. You know, they have to pay more for labor because of all the inflation. You know, they've got to pay more for all their other services. And it just, it really, it's a short-term boom, but in the long run, it's not a good thing.
Well, let me.
Who would want to have a weak currency? Who would say, I want to pay as much as possible for things, and I want to sell them as cheap. You know what I mean?
Right.
I want to sell them as cheaply as possible. You want to do the opposite. You want to buy cheap and sell things for as much money as you can. You don't want a weak currency. You want a strong one.
Andy Bernanke can't win this game, can he? No matter what he does, I mean, it's
don't underestimate. You know, a lot of people think that. A lot of people are saying, you know what, this is it. I'm going to tell you, don't underestimate the ability of these guys to pull a rabbit out of the hat. Right now, yeah, it looks pretty bleak. You know, you got a weak dollar, you got high oil, gold's reacting favorably, but we were closer to hyperinflation back in the 1970s than we are now, although we're getting pretty close now. But we were closer then. Now, you could certainly make the argument that, well, you know, fundamentally we were a lot stronger in the 1970s. You know, we still had, you know, some superiority in manufacturing, and we could still do things for ourselves. And now we're reliant on foreigners for so much.
Right. Our debt is so high, both domestic and internationally, you know, and you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet the farm that this one is it, though.
Okay.
You know, these guys are gonna try and print their way out of this.
Oh yeah, they may do that, but if they do that, then we have further debasement of the dollar, all the other countries are watching us. I mean, there are people. Let's face it, there are people in the oil exporting countries, I mean, that watch the dollar to a fraction of a penny change every day. I mean, that's all they do is watch the value of the dollar and how much is being printed. You know, what's happening with the dollar? I mean, they don't watch it just casually like we do. They watch it, you know, with a under a microscope. And so if we start printing more money, isn't that going to exasperate the situation that we have now anyway?
No, for sure. I mean, you know, a quarter percent on a currency move for somebody that's pushing out, you know, millions of barrels of oil a day, I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, so they do watch, and they watch very closely. I mean, these guys owe, at least, you know, admittedly, they owe $10 trillion, our government. That's the admitted national debt. You start rolling in the net present value of the future stuff that we're going to owe.
Is that what they call the unfunded debt, Andy?
Yeah, okay. The unfunded liabilities. You're talking over $50 trillion.
Yeah,
I mean, that's serious money.
Right.
These guys, there's only one thing they can do, and that's the print. But you have to remember something that's very important. You know, don't look at the euro, the pound, you know, or any of these other currencies, the Aussie dollar, the Canadian dollar. Don't look at any of these currencies as a perfect currency, because they're not.
Right.
They're all fiat.
Yeah,
it's a race to the bottom, because
that's
everybody
right.
wants to export stuff. Everybody's going to want a weak currency. I think you're going to see these other central banks, they're going to react in time. Now, maybe the idea here is to sacrifice the dollar. But people have to understand the difference between paper money and real money, which is gold, silver,
right.
oil could be used. You know, anything
right.
that's worth, anything that has value to individuals or... You know, it's used in businesses. Anything like that, any basic commodity like that could be used as money. I really think that people need to be cautious about, you know, using the euro as some example of a perfect hard currency, because it really is.
You know, I think the American Institute of Economic Research, they did a white paper on currencies several months ago, and they always conclude each one of their white papers, which is usually several pages long, goes into detail, and it's not a political paper at all, strictly economic stuff. And admittedly, I understand maybe 80% of what they're talking about that I can really understand, and 20% just too difficult for me. But anyway, they ended the article or the analysis by saying, and just remember that the United States, the U.S. dollar is the world's tallest dwarf. And they're saying what you're saying, is that, you know, although the other currencies may start looking better, you know, we're still the best, but of the best, there's not much to talk about.
No, they're not. You know, there's a couple of, you take like the Swiss franc is a decent currency, the Swedish kroner, some of the Nordic
right.
states. The Canadian dollar is popular because Canada has so many resources.
Yeah.
You know, so there's an implicit backing.
I see.
There, you know, but it's not a peg, it's not explicit. You know, it's not like they have an oil-backed currency or anything like that. But there is at least some implicit backing there. Any country that has strong manufacturing or strong, resources or things like that, you've got some implicit backing, you know, or at least the money is backed by the ability to produce things. You know, now admittedly, you know, the U.S., I think as of August, we had, if I remember my numbers correctly, we had exported around $732 billion worth of goods. That's a lot of stuff. The problem is we brought in over $1.2 trillion.
Yeah.
You know, so we still have a pretty serious trade deficit, and that's three quarters of the year.
Yeah. Now, eventually, that money comes back to us in the form of investment, but there comes a point where people become overinvested in the United States, and they don't want to do that.
Well, no, that's the problem. You know, the Chinese, for a long time, and I'll use the Chinese as an example, they were buying U.S. Treasuries.
Right.
And they were helping to subsidize the American housing market by
right.
buying our bonds, which kept our interest rates low. Okay, well, that makes sense. But now the Chinese, we got a lot of bonds. We don't really want so many U.S. bonds.
Right.
Well, what else are we going to buy? So they set up these sovereign funds. And that's there was a news that this was a couple months ago about China setting up a sovereign fund to buy equities in different places. You know, they bought equities here. They bought them elsewhere, you know, so they're diversifying, which is smart on their part.
Right.
You know, you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. You know, they've got $1.5 trillion almost in foreign reserves, and they certainly don't want to have them all in one place. So a lot of these countries are starting to do that. They're starting to buy equities. Now, the problem is, like, all right, that's great, but I see a problem with foreigners starting to buy up a lot of American companies. Because eventually they're going to, if this trade situation continues, eventually they're going to own them all.
Right.
And I have a real problem with that.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, it's one of those things where, you know, what is Congress really going to do about it? You know, when Dubai tried to buy the ports, they cried national security, and they said, no, you can't put your dollars into that. You can't have that asset. You can buy our treasuries, but you can't buy our ports.
Right.
And then the Chinese tried to buy Unocal. Remember that?
Yes.
And same thing, national security. You can buy our treasuries. You're good enough for that, but you can't buy Unocal.
Yeah.
You know, they cried, you know, this would be a national security issue and all that and other stuff. Well, yeah, it would be a national security issue, but don't you think it's a national security issue if you've got one country that has that owns all your debt?
Yeah.
No, I think that's a pretty big national security issue, too.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, it's just... If it wasn't so serious, it would be humorous.
Right.
At how our Congress deals with these situations. You know, it's like they make a mess, and then when they try and clean it up, they end up making more of a mess.
Right. Let me ask I interrupted you.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Well, I just said we have about 5 minutes left, and I was just wondering if you can give us whatever your guesstimate is, what the heck's going to happen? I mean, when I say short term, within the next, let's say, within the next 6 months or a year, what do you think we're looking at, Andy? I mean, just take a shot at it, you know, and we won't hold your feet to the fire either.
in a theme kind of way, you're gonna see more inflation. I believe you're gonna see $100 oil. You know, that may happen sooner than later. It may take a little bit longer. It could happen this week. I mean, we're pretty close now. I think you're going to see stock markets generally go higher, you know, as a function more of the inflation as opposed to actual prosperity. I think you're going to see the housing situation. I mean, the housing numbers have just been downright awful.
Right.
And they've continued to be awful. And, you know, the people that were calling bottom back at the beginning of this year have now kind of pushed it off to mid-late next year. I think that might be the bottom, but I think it's going to be a stretched-out bottom. I don't think it's going to be a one-month low and then it's going to start climbing back up again. I think it's more going to be a continued period of weakness. We built too many houses. Now, what remains to be seen is how much of this is going to spill over into the consumer's arena.
Right.
You know, how much of the mortgage default, the foreclosures, what's going to happen with that? Are we going to negotiate these mortgages? Are we going to foreclose on these people? What happens there is going to have a lot to do with, you know, how the consumer economy continues.
I see.
And there's a lot of emphasis on that because the consumer is responsible for over two-thirds of our economy.
The price of gold January 1st will be what?
Price of gold January 1st.
Right.
Oh, now you're really putting my feet in the fire.
I want you to make me feel good. Yeah, tell me what it's going to be.
You're going to make me pick a number?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 825.
2,500?
825.
825. Oh, 825. Okay. All right. That's fair enough. Okay. Andy, I got about
$2,500 an ounce. Boy, if that's the case, we really have a problem.
Andy, I only had 40.
Gold is due for a little bit of a correction here.
Yeah.
But you know, it's been responding positively. It seems to be tracking oil, ironically enough, as opposed to the falling dollar. It seems to be right now moving more closely with oil.
So yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what continues there. You know, if we get a little pullback in oil, what'll happen with gold? What'll happen with the dollar? You know,
right.
The three of those things are going to be your themes.
Okay.
You know, how they kind of interplay is going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah. Andy, I have only 45 minutes on my phone. I reserve 45 minutes. We have 1 minute left, so I have to hang because I have to close up, okay?
I want to thank you
very much for calling in. It's terrific. Folks, this is Andy Sutton from MyTwoCentsOnline.com. Go to his website for the economic facts that'll help you become more effective in handling your money. Andy, thank you very much. I'll be talking to you again.
Thanks, Joe. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Okay, that was great. Andy called in. That was wonderful. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support. We'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com or phone in your questions to 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. And remember, don't steal. The government hates competition. Folks, we were supposed to talk about the healthcare this evening. Well, we didn't get that chance because Andy called in and we had a very stimulating conversation on the state of the economy, which I appreciate very much. We will continue the subject of healthcare on Thursday morning. This will be Thursday, November 8th at 6:30 a.m. So please stay tuned. So till next time, stay well and stay tuned.